Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Nick Wright in 30 minutes. It is great to have you in today. Joy Taylor is joining me. I feel I've got a new shirt on today. I very much like that, Joy. Not really a clothes person.
Bought some new shirts.
The company did. They're supporting me and the show. It's a great feeling. How are you doing, by the way?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
I am too.
I hope there's no blowouts. I'm hoping for great games all weekend. I don't think there will be, though.
Well, good coaches and good quarterbacks don't get blown out a lot. And
yeah, the only one that's really concerning is San Francisco, and I've seen San Francisco beat Green Bay. So
yes, and they're hot.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. Story time. For most of my childhood, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. The richest family was the Nordstrom's. Classy and dignified. You've seen those Nordstrom stores. They used to have a cool policy. You could bring anything back. Nordstrom's, high school, college, they own the Seahawks. Today, they're worth $37 billion. And they are not one of the 10 richest families in Seattle. Did they get dumb? No. Smart family, great kids. Did they have chaos that broke apart the company? No. A very smart, well-heeled, educated family. But Bill Gates is from Seattle. And Paul Allen is. And Jeff Bezos is. And it's a tech center. And the world changed. Can you imagine that? Their company's worth $37 billion. They're not a top 10 richest Seattle family. I looked it up this morning. That success and wealth is not defined just by how smart you are. It's by laws and rules and cultural changes. And I was thinking about Andy Reid this morning. And Andy Reid grew up in an NFL where the mantra was, Joy Taylor's brother knows this, defense wins championships. Offense was sort of an eye roll, finesse, pretty. You gotta play defense to win the big games. You ask Jimmy Johnson, the Vince Lombardis, right? Steel Curtain is what we grew up with. Nasty Raiders, what we grew up with. The Ravens and Ray Lewis. Andy Reid, the rules never benefited him. And during that time, Bill Belichick, a defensive genius, rose to prominence. Tom Brady certainly helped. But then about 5 years ago, the NFL pivoted. All the rules now benefit offense. And in the last 3 years, Andy Reid is 38-11, 6-1 in the playoffs, 2 Super Bowls, and favored to be in a third. And Bill Belichick in the last 3 years is 29-20, 0-2 in the playoffs, and just had a quarterback humiliate him with 7 straight touchdown drives. A quarterback, it should be noted, in his division, who I don't think is necessarily in his prime yet, Josh Allen. Add this. Andy Reid has a great general manager who continues to hit first, second, and third round home runs with centers and receivers and running backs and tight ends. And what has been the hole in Belichick's game? Drafting wide receivers. Look at the teams left in the NFL. Look at the wide receiver tight end talent for Cincinnati. The Rams, Tampa, Green Bay, San Francisco, Kansas City, Buffalo. And then look at New England's. It's bottom 2 or 3 in the league. The Nordstrom family in Seattle didn't get dumb. The world changed, and it benefits those in tech. In fact, Jeff Bezos from Seattle, for all I know, worked at Nordstrom's as a kid and built a retailer that helped put them mostly on the back burner, Amazon. I'm not saying in any way Belichick will get dumber, but the world has changed. The best quarterback won every division. Every single NFC playoff team was an offensive coach. Overwhelmingly, who is favored this weekend? All but one offensive coach. If Andy Reid, at 63, coaches to 69 like Belichick, because the last 3 years he has separated from Bill, will history be very kind like it has been to all those Seattle kids who embrace tech? Gates and Paul Allen and Jeff Bezos. And by the way, all you brilliant young tech stars in your 20s, 30s, and 40s now. The great retailers didn't get dumb. The other business people that owned waste management companies and retail companies and food companies and you know, giants in other industries, they didn't get dumb. The world changed. And you can make $1 billion now in an afternoon in Silicon Valley. That's just one company. That's just one human. I look at Andy Reid and I think to myself, New England's hole is the ability to draft offensive talent, Mac Jones, low ceiling, Josh Allen in division, and Andy Reid, good God, did you see their draft last year? Center, they drafted, best center in football. Guard, receivers, backs, tight ends. Don't be surprised if Andy stays till 69, you look at his last 10 years, and you look at Belichick's, and there aren't arguments to be made who we're calling the greatest coach of all time. It's not because Belichick got dumb. The world changes. The Nordstroms never got dumb. Still smart today. The world changes. So I was thinking about this, as I often do, as I just roam around the house, thinking about topics for the show. And so I looked at all the quarterbacks left in the NFL. And it's very interesting. So I'm just going to read the quarterback. Joe Burrow, who got hurt in college, beat out for a job, had to transfer, will face Ryan Tannehill, who started as a college wide receiver, went to the NFL, and then was dumped by his first team. He'll face Jimmy Garoppolo, who's never really been embraced, whose heir apparent was drafted, was a second-round pick, hurt a lot, will face Aaron Rodgers, who had to go to a junior college and is still fuming because he dropped in the first round. He'll face Matt Stafford, who was just a great high school and college quarterback and then spent the next 13 years in the losing tunnel called the Lions, and he'll take on Tom Brady, who dropped to the sixth round and, again, still has a chip on his shoulder. And then Josh Allen, who nobody offered a scholarship out of high school, went to a junior college, still nobody offered him a scholarship except Wyoming, got the you-know-what kicked out of him in college, was terrible as a rookie in the NFL, will face Patrick Mahomes, who didn't have a winning record as a college quarterback. That's who's left. Doubted, hardened, questioned, mocked, ignored. The NBA, it's different. Basketball culture is often spotting the greatest talent at 12, 13, 14 years old. You line up the swag, you get them to the best AAU teams, you get them to the best college for a year, and then they go to the NBA and the commissioner, Adam Silver, acknowledges, my players are unhappy. Why wouldn't they be? It's the first time in their lives at 19, 20, 21 years old. They've been ripped and mocked and ridiculed. In the NFL, the last quarterback standing have all been doubted. I'm not against the transfer portal. I'm not against name, image, likeness. But there was a cautionary tale yesterday in America. Tate Martell was the number one high school quarterback. I met him once in high school, Bishop Gorman in Vegas. He was the thing. And then he just kept transferring Ohio State and Miami and UNLV. And yesterday he acknowledged that 23 years old, he retired from football. Transfer portal, the easier place. I'll play there. He never started. Wish him the best of luck. I'm sure he'll do fine. Bright kid, super talented. Transfer portal now is going to create kids who, if they don't start day one, I am out of here. and there'll be bidding wars for high school quarterbacks who will get $5, $10 million in their pocket. I am a proponent of both. But I hope their dads realize, look who's left this weekend. Big Ben ignored by Ohio State. He was eliminated. Are we entering a time where quarterbacks, and this is what's happened over the last 7, 8 years, the great high school quarterbacks, like the great basketball players, are spotted at 13, 14. They are then moved into the best high school with the best teammates. They do it in Southern California. Then they go to Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, best teammates. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Are you ready for a 4-year tunnel of crap? Because if you can come through it, you'll end up playing on this weekend. I am for the transfer portal. I am for name, image, likeness. I want my kids to have an easier life than I did. But I used to always joke, granite countertops and crown molding are the death of drive and determination. I don't want my NFL quarterbacks to become 15-year-old NBA stars who, for the first time when they get heat, are miserable. It's the journey and the misery that makes Joe Burrow. It's the journey and the misery that makes Brady. Matt Stafford, 13 years of losing and getting crushed with no run game and always falling behind and having the pressure and having to win shootouts is precisely why he's here this weekend. Can't wait for the games, and I think it's why I've always liked football more than basketball, and I love both. I like the journey of it. I like the hardened, toughened, criticized, eye-rolled, ignored way of life for star quarterbacks, and that's who's left. Not the biggest, not the strongest, not the oldest, not the most talented, not the greatest runners, all of them at some point ignored along their journey. I think it's what makes them, not just a part of them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Mic check. Mic check.
If you want exclusive insight from the biggest names in the sports game, what's good? This is national champion and former pro baller Chris Johnson. And let me tell you a little bit about my new series, KJ Live.
KJ Live is the only show featuring me going one-on-one with the brightest basketball minds on the planet to get the real.
And when I say real, I mean that real. I got legendary Hall of Famers, elite coaches, and the top basketball insiders bringing you a unique perspective on all things hoops culture that you will not find anywhere else.
To make your next move your best move.
And tap in with me on KJ Live, wherever you get your podcast from.
I always try to visualize stories happening. And if I can visualize it, then I'll talk about it. I'll predict it. I can't see Aaron Rodgers losing this weekend. And here's why. So I look at all four games, and I mean, it's really good teams, really good coaches, really good quarterbacks, right? But last week, I said going into the weekend, the pressure was on number one, Matt Stafford. He delivered. And number two, Mike McCarthy. And he did not and got clobbered for it. So it kind of validated what we said. We were all kind of waiting for Stafford to win. He did. It was good. It was a non-story then. And McCarthy got hammered for losing. Not Dak necessarily, but McCarthy. So this weekend, let's say Mahomes loses. Well, I mean, how many teams get to 3 straight Super Bowls? We're not going to clobber him for that. And he loses to Josh Allen. Let's say Brady loses. Well, he's 44. He's got 7 Super Bowls. We're not going to spend a lot of time Monday ripping Brady. If Stafford loses, well, he won a playoff game, first year with McVay, won the NFL's toughest division, had the highest fourth quarter passer rating in the NFL, and again, he just won a playoff game. We're not going to crush him for losing to what I believe is a better roster. If Joe Burrow loses or Zach Taylor, haven't they kind of exceeded expectations? Honestly, I had him for fourth in the division. I don't think I was alone. If Mike Vrabel and Tannehill lose, I still can't figure out how they're here. They lost Derrick Henry for 2 months. How are they the number one seed? But Aaron Rodgers spent the last 6 months needling the Packers front office, vaccines, politicians, the media. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to take a lot of hacks at Aaron if he loses. And by the way, he's 0-3 against San Francisco. But I can't see it. At home, off a bye, Garoppolo's not healthy. Nick Bosa might not be. Fred Warner's limping. Green Bay's finally healthy. I cannot envision Monday's show after Aaron loses Saturday night. I can't. I can see everything else. I can see Burrow and Jamar Chase going crazy town and then pulling out dramatic win. I can see Stafford and the Rams. If Tristan Wirfs is hurt, right tackle, Tom faces pressure. And, you know, let's be honest, Stafford's been a great second half quarterback. OBJ, the run game, they've got Cooper Kupp. I can see Buffalo out-dueling Kansas City in a wild shootout and a turnover late in the game. Mahomes' ball comes out of his hands, not even his fault. I cannot see Aaron going 0-4, all that drama, people looking to take hacks at him, and he loses to Jimmy Garoppolo at home. I can't see it. So that is my lock of the week. I don't know the spread, whatever, but I cannot envision that. And so I can't predict it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
If I was Nick Wright, I would be terribly nervous going into this weekend. You did see Josh Allen dissect the greatest defensive coach of all time. I mean, with relative ease. So as we go into the weekend, Nick sometimes will tell you he's not nervous. I don't know. Let's bring him on, Nick Wright. I don't know. A little nervous, kind of nervous.
No, I don't see how the Chiefs can win, Colin. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's ridiculous that they're even favored. I mean, but Vegas is smart. They're not even the full 3-point favorites. What have they done to earn that? I mean, the Bills scored. Have you ever seen a team score 7 touchdowns in a row in a playoff game? I mean, you know, 20 hours later, you literally saw a team score 6 touchdowns in a row against T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick and Cam Hayward. But it was nothing like what we saw from Buffalo. I mean, no, I know you're picking the Bills. Is Mahomes the worst quarterback left in the playoffs? I don't know. Maybe he's better than Tannehill and Garoppolo. I'm not sure, though. I really don't know. I know he's not better than Burrow in your eyes. I know he's not better than Josh Allen. I know he's not better than Brady. I know he's not better than Rodgers. Hey, you love Stafford. I don't know. I just, you know, it's been a good run. And, you know, Josh Allen is going to be able to add him, and these Bills are going to be adding themselves to the long list of teams that have beaten Mahomes twice in a season. That list of teams is currently 0 teams long. And I'm sure last year when Josh Allen was, you know, the hot MVP candidate quarterback who got more MVP votes than Mahomes and they played a playoff game in Arrowhead, and after spotting the Bills 9 points, the Chiefs were on a 38-6 run like it was a AAU basketball tournament. That's got nothing to do with it. No, listen, it's been fun. I assume Chad Henne will probably have to play in this game. I don't see how the Chiefs can win, Colin. Yeah, how much you got Buffalo by? 14? Tell me. I know you saved. Obviously are going to be on the Bills minus the 2.
No.
So
no.
How much, though?
No, I
or
am.
Or plus the 2.
I'd be honest with you. I think Kansas City wins. I do. Because I have a belief.
Wow!
Because.
You're the one.
Yeah, so I think Josh Allen, to this point in his career, he's still got rough edges. He still tends to be great game, followed by average, great average. Whereas I think Mahomes tends to have occasional slumps for a month, but he is, on a week-to-week basis, a more consistent high-end performer. So I like Kansas City close. So there you go. How about that?
Oh, okay. All right, okay. They're good. Listen, you're going to be wrong because I don't see how they can win.
All right.
I mean, Bills have the coaching advantage. What do they have, 3 head coaches on their staff? The enemy can't even get an interview. I mean, I don't know how they do it. But, hey, well, it'll be you and, you know, the fans in the stadium. No one else believes in them. But go ahead, Colin.
Now,
surprised.
I don't like to talk about Baker too much because I come across as, like, petty, right? Like, I don't want to do that. So I'll give the floor to you, but it is sort of interesting that OBJ in 9 games has 6 touchdowns and has become the go-to red zone wide receiver. What did you make of the playoff performance where they doubled Cooper and the Rams were like, all right, we'll go to the other guy, and he crushed?
Yeah, what I think is I do think that we should maybe, as a collective media, spend, I don't know, at least 20% as much time discussing the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. in his first playoff game since the boat trip was directly responsible for all of the Rams' offensive touchdowns because he scored the first one. He had a 30-yard catch and run to set up the second one, and he threw the bomb to set up the third one. Let's spend maybe, you know what, I'll call it 25% of as much time talking about that as we talked about the color of his visor or the size of his watch when he was in Cleveland. Because there was a growing narrative, Odell had the one great catch, and then what else has he done? You know, the best open to a career in receiver history other than Randy Moss. But other than that, what has he done? So, yes, I do think that this is an example where it makes Baker, and by the way, Kevin Stefanski's got to wear some of this as well, look bad. But it also does make Odell look good. And while I have not committed to memory all of your Odell takes the way I have your Baker takes, I don't think you have been maybe his biggest supporter,
right,
his biggest defense. So maybe while you are taking a victory lap on Baker, you can give my pal, the kid with the yellow hair and now purple hair, changes colors, a little bit of credit that he's still quite good.
Yes.
And that he is still a difference-making receiver in this league.
Yes. I said on Tuesday morning, I said, I didn't think Wash, but I said he got the drops in Cleveland. He literally always had great hands, and he got the drops. And I said I underestimated the power of culture and coaching and Stafford and OBJ. You put them with the right culture. They don't feel like OBJ has to have 19 targets. Just go make big plays. Go be great in moments. And
the power of and the power of the city of Los Angeles. It reinvigorated you. Yeah. There was a couple years there before you got to L.A. People thought, you know, Coward lost his fastball.
That's right.
Got out to L.A. It's like, as good as ever.
All right. Okay. So Wednesday is your tier day. So I haven't seen this morning. Yeah. I heard you talk about it when I pulled in, but then I didn't see it. So show me, what are your tiers today? Wednesday tiers.
All right. So tell me what, we can just show up and we can show them to you right now. So we can go bottom to top. The Titans and Bengals, one team will win and then that team will lose the next week. One of them will be in the final four. They can hang a banner like Michigan State, but that's it. I look at the Bucs, Colin. I think it's too many games in the last 2 years. They've played more games than any team in football because they didn't have the bye last year. They don't have the bye this year. The worst injury concerns me. The Jensen injury concerns me. Obviously, the wide receiver stuff. I think both NFC dogs, I heard you talking about the Packers. I think both NFC dogs this week are live dogs. I think Green Bay would have rather played anyone but San Francisco. Then there's the Bills, top of the mountain. There's two ways to look at it. One way is top of the mountain because they're the best team. They're looking down at all the peasants beneath them. The other way is Magic Mountain Josh Allen because he goes up to the top, then he plummets on down. We'll see which one it is.
Yeah.
And then Chiefs and Packers, I think, are the two best teams in football. So that's how I find it. What I would be most interested in is your thoughts on Bucks, where the Bucks are. I think they're banged up. I think they're tired. I think the AB thing took a little bit of their spirit. I know they looked great against Philly, but Philly shouldn't have been there. I think the Bucs could be in real trouble this weekend, Kyle.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me, so Chris Godwin's out, AB's gone, Tristan Wirfs banged up, Ryan Jensen banged up. So to that, you're right. But I will say they took a 31-0 lead without Fournette and Ronald Jones, and I really think the key to this football team beyond Brady is Leonard Fournette, which is weird because when he came here, he was an afterthought. But when he's running, and I mean, Leonard Fournette is like a different player in big games. And when he's running and Brady can throw not only out of the gun but on play action, it's a handful. But I think to your point, they got a little bit taken out of them last week, so I don't have a problem with that. So I do want to segue to this, though. Because I always like to get one NBA question in because you're dynamic and love the sport. The Frank Vogel story is interesting. He's in trouble. Then there's a story yesterday. He's not in trouble. It's interesting. I don't believe he wanted Westbrook, a bad defensive player. I believe he wanted KCP and Caruso, good defensive players. But in the end, I don't think this – now, he's got AD, a defensive player. He doesn't want to play center, and he's hurt. So I have some sympathy for Frank Vogel. This is not the roster that he really wanted. What's your take on him?
Sure. Listen, I think that if we're assigning culpability for the Lakers up to this point, very disappointing season, the front office deserves more of it than anyone. I know everyone says, oh, but LeBron's in charge. If LeBron were in charge, Ty Lue would have gotten this coaching job a few years ago. LeBron signed a contract extension prior to last year. He doesn't have the ability to kind of hold the team hostage the way he could in Cleveland. If they didn't want to trade for Russ, if they didn't want to make these moves, they wouldn't have. So I think the front office deserves the most criticism. But Vogel also, nobody is really defending Vogel. They are simply giving reasons why it's not all his fault, and it's not all his fault. But I think people want to find a reason to put this at the feet of LeBron, and so they're pretending that there's a lot of things Frank Vogel has done great this year. What's your favorite Frank Vogel moment? Let me tell you, when it took him a dozen games to realize you can't play Rondo and Westbrook at the same time. Like, that's not great. How about the fact that Steve Nash, who no one exactly is comparing to Red Auerbach, figured out 9 months ago DeAndre Jordan was washed, and he was starting him for the first 20 games of the year. That's not great. And so I don't think Vogel should be fired, at least at present. But I also think this idea that he should be untouchable because they won a championship 15 months ago, that's two seasons ago. Right now, LeBron James is going to win the scoring title, and you're playing 500 basketball. That's got to fall on a lot of people, and it can't just be the front office. So I do think Vogel needs to be better.
All right. Yeah, I think I caught you off guard. I like Kansas City over Buffalo, but I do. I actually.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do.
I
think
like it's that.
No, I mean, Josh Allen's not. He's a beautiful piece of art. He just needs to be sandpapered a little bit. But I feel like Mahomes, I've got what I've got. I know what I'm getting every week. He has many slumps. Yep. Mechanically, yep. Gets out of them.
I mean, he's no Burrow or Herbert or any of those other quarterbacks that you said passed him. But, yeah, I mean, he should be able to handle Josh Allen. We'll see.
All right, see Nicky. You, good seeing you, buddy. Nick Wright, my buddy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I remember years ago Derek Jeter was asked about a hitting slump. And Derek Jeter said, I don't overthink it. And for Derek Jeter, a slump could be 0-16 or 0-15. And he said, it was some reporter had asked him, and he goes, I just want to go hit the ball hard tonight. Wherever I hit it, I just want to hit it hard. And eventually, if you hit the ball hard a lot, it will find a place on a baseball field and drop in as a hit. We've got analytics all over the place. And in the NBA, everybody's talking about analytics. But so often in the playoffs, it's like, dude, I need a basket. Just Chris Paul, just go get me a basket. And he'll shoot like a 12-footer, which nobody likes anymore. Giannis, just go make a stop. Doesn't have to be a stop and a three-pointer. That sometimes in situations in baseball playoffs, in hitting slumps, in basketball playoffs, in NFL playoffs, we overthink stuff. Troy Aikman, there's a bite out there this morning, and we're not allowed to use it yet. But he's talking about the quarterback controversy with Dak and that quarterback draw overshadowed the fact that Dak didn't play very well and trailed 23-7 at one point to San Francisco at home. And the Cowboys have the number one rated offensive line in the league, according to PFF. So Aikman's quote was, he goes, listen, there was a lot of single coverage on C.D. Lamb. I hate going back to when I was playing because nobody cares, but with coordinators these days, it's all about schemes rather than that corner's scared to death. Go run the route tree. I'll get the ball to you. He goes, if they would have covered Michael Irvin the way they covered CeeDee Lamb with single coverage, he'd have had 10 catches by halftime. Said Aikman, the game is not that difficult. Okay, if I got a great player at wide receiver and the corner's on him not as good in single coverage, throw him the ball. He's going to win most of the time. And I think that does bring up a concern. So Dak Prescott's offensive line is rated number one in the league to the people who grade the offensive line. You're at home. You have CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper. Dalton Schultz is going to be a free agent. He's going to make a lot of money. They won't keep him. Cedric Wilson, good backs. Dak averaged under 6 yards per attempt. That's with the two best 49er players out. Nick Bosa, out. Fred Warner, hurt at home. So at some point, you know, we talk about all this and that, McCarthy, you got to make plays. Dak Prescott against non-divisional opponents this year. He wasn't terrible, but he was just solid. 11 games, he was 5-6. 66% completion, fine. Burrow down the stretch has been 75. 21 TDs, 8 picks, nothing to be embarrassed about. Passer rating, the new standard is 100. He's at 95. If you look at Dak versus playoff teams this year, and this is really interesting, against the Eagles, he's unbelievable. He's Joe Montana. He completes 80% of his throws, 8 TDs, no picks, passer rating, you know, in that Brady, Burrow, Mahomes when you're hot. But against the other playoff teams, it's really ordinary. 1-5, 92 passer rating, 12 touchdown, 5 picks. And again, that's with the number one graded offensive line, above average tight end production, good backs. I don't think Zeke is nearly what he used to be, but he and Pollard are above average and excellent wide receiver talent. So remember, outside of Zach Martin, they got to get a new tackle. They're getting worse at tackle, not better. Zeke, probably at some point they move him in the offseason because of his cost. At some point, you're going to keep, you can get out of the Amari Cooper contract now, and it's not nearly the cap hit. They're not going to re-sign Michael Gallup because he's coming off a major injury, and they're not going to be able to keep Schultz the tight end because he's too good and too expensive. So with all this stuff, Dak, we got a trend here about 3 years, has been pretty ordinary against teams not named the Giants, the Washington football team, or the Eagles. And so it doesn't mean he can't play. That's not, but he's been surrounded here in the first 4 or 5 years with really good stuff. Now, the good news is the Cowboys draft pretty well. Can they find a Micah Parsons on offense? Can they go get another great wide receiver? I mean, CeeDee Lamb was a good pick. People criticized it. I didn't get it. It was a great pick. They found Michael Gallup. I didn't watch him play in college. Amari Cooper move was smart. So the Cowboys do some things really well, other things not really well, but they do draft a lot of playmakers, and they deserve credit for that. But, you know, you start looking at that game, the quarterback draw got all the heat, and McCarthy got all the heat. Dak didn't play well. With all those weapons, down 23-7. And that's out. Bosa's out. Warner's out. Garoppolo kind of let you back in. Or you had a chance to get. If Garoppolo doesn't throw that interception, that game could have been a rout. Like that, it would have looked really bad. That final scoreboard would not have been tight. If Garoppolo didn't butcher that fourth and inches, not letting Trent Williams get set, you don't have a quarterback controversy, but you never get the ball back.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I saw this news, though. The Seahawks fired Ken Norton, a defensive coordinator. Now, it's newsworthy because Pete Carroll and Ken Norton are tight, and Pete Carroll had to fire him. So I was told that Russell Wilson wanted changes. I don't think Pete wanted to do this, but since he gave Ken Norton the coordinator job, they've gone from 16th in yards allowed to 28th. They don't take the ball away. They're 22nd in sacks. I think the move needed to be made. But you know, there's the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. And I've made this comment many times before. It would be one thing if your enemy was doing way better than you. But you lived in Boise and he lived in Bangkok, out of sight, out of mind. But if he was your neighbor and he's driving up with a new Lexus or a Tesla or Mercedes and he's got a bigger house than you and all the toys, it's kind of in your face. Right? When you get a divorce, you'd prefer you don't live next door to each other, right? Especially if she's doing better. You'd rather not hear or see it all the time. And it's like, I think this is powerful because we hear the story about Russell Wilson fuming at that Super Bowl watching Brady. He was in the press box fuming. He's watching Brady and all these weapons. And even though I think it's important for Pete to fire Ken Norton, I got nothing against Ken, but it wasn't working. I feel like Seattle's defensive schemes and offensive schemes have been outdated for years, but Pete's probably now just going to hire his old buddy, an old coaching buddy in his 60s. They still draft bizarrely. They've missed on too many top picks. They don't have many picks left. The offensive line was rated 25th. Running backs are still okay. The division's brutal. But I think more than anything, this is really tough, is that he looks around the NFL, and Stafford has McVay, and Kyler Murray has Cliff Kingsbury. and Aaron Rodgers has Matt LaFleur, and Joe Burrow has Zach Taylor, and Mahomes has Andy Reid. And Brady's got Bruce Arians. And I think he looks around the league, and he's a smart guy, and he looks at all these quarterbacks who he's in the same kind of, you know, galaxy. And outside of Josh Allen, they mostly have offensive coaches. And he sees what's happening in the NFC, where every single playoff team, every single one in the NFC, had an offensive coach. And I think it's just in his face. So I think all this stuff it feels like the inevitable. It's window dressing. I think, you know, his contract, they could franchise tag him, but his contract's up end of this year, next year, pretty soon. And he's a huge cap hit. So, you know, I could see Seattle. They don't have the draft picks to address quarterback. They'd have to go out and spend a lot of money and get another quarterback. But I think this stuff is jammed in Russell's face. He's a bright guy. He looks around. He sees the changes. And he has a 70-year-old defensive coach and Mike Zimmer defensive coach fired and Vic Fangio fired. And Ron Rivera can't figure out the offense. And Pittsburgh looks outdated with Mike Tomlin on offense. And I think he just looks around the league and it's like Belichick now can't win his division. Belichick. So this stuff is tough. I honestly believe that Aaron Rodgers has a greater chance of remaining in Green Bay, despite all the drama, than Russell does in Seattle. I could absolutely, if Aaron wins the Super Bowl, why would you leave? You complained. They listened. Apparently, he's had great conversations with his GM, Brian Gutekunst, and they win. And by the way, win in a year where there's all these great quarterbacks and coaches out there. And you can make an argument, Matt LaFleur, outside of maybe a McVay, maybe even with McVay, is the best young offensive coach out there. So I can see Aaron winning and just saying, bygones, bygones. Let's just rip my contract up. I'm going to end it here. I'm probably going to play to 41. I don't see him playing forever. I think Aaron's got a lot of interest. But it is interesting. The Russell Pete Carroll thing is, I mean, you start looking around this league now. Every NFC playoff team had an offensive coach. The best quarterback won every division. I've never seen that. Last week, the best quarterback won every game except Dak Garoppolo, and I don't think the gap's as big as we all think it is, although I do like Dak more.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Thomas Dimitroff's a former NFL general manager. There's a lot of coaching openings, 7 of them. What's the best opening? That and more. He's joining us now live. Let me address that to start, is that there are cultural changes in the NBA. You can't have two guys on the court, Thomas, that can't shoot. That's just the new game. In baseball, I need home run hitters. I don't care if you strike out. Cody Bellinger reminds me of Dave Kingman when I was a kid, and Kingman was considered weird and odd. Today, Dave Kingman would be exactly what I want, home runs and strikeouts. And I look at the NFL, and Thomas, every NFC playoff team, offensive coach. Half the AFC, offensive coach. Best quarterback won every division. How do I not, if I'm Chicago, if I'm Denver, if I'm Minnesota, how do I not, even if he has the second best interview, how do I hire a defensive coach, right? Like, tell me.
Well, look, you know, I was fortunate to be around two really good defensive coaches, Mike Smith first, and then Dan Quinn, top notch, you know, in their worlds, right? And they had so much to offer. And when you get into that role, Colin, when you're interviewing, you're in that process, you do get caught up in, let's get the best, you know, team maker, let's get the best morale guy, let's get the smartest, most intuitive football person. And that, you start to be really attracted to that. And you realize how important that is to pull a team together. Now, to your point, after having two defensive coordinators, and I love them both, my mind always started going to thinking about having, you know, someone who was in that building who was massively acute on the offensive side. You know, we see what Kyle Shanahan's doing out there. He does really fine work. He is genius-like. And organizations do want that more and more now, I do believe.
You know, it's interesting. Here's another thing that I with the Raiders, interim coaches, we've seen this before. The players want to appeal to him. The players liked him anyway. They get hot for 6 weeks. They get in the playoffs, and everybody's like, I want our interim guy. And I'm like, okay, that's not the real world. I want the best coach. If a Harbaugh called me, he's gotten to a Super Bowl, I would have to take that phone call. What do you do if you're the Raiders? The interim guy's a good dude, little lightning in a bottle. They won a ton of close games and overtime games. Doesn't mean a thing starting next year. How do you address that issue?
Look, Rich, to your point, Rich Bisaccia is a really good football coach. He's earned his time to step into that spot. Like you said, there's elements of lightning in the bottle. I understand that. He is a really good football man, and you can't just find someone that's going to react as well as as he does as a coach to all the players, and the players react to him. He has something special about him. My earlier comment about just offensive coaches or how people are looking at that, if they truly believe they can secure that, just that guy who has everything as the offensive coordinator, then you pair those guys, and I think it's really important. Look, the Raiders have a lot going in their favor. They have good football players there. Yes, okay. And I really appreciate Mike Mayock's approach. Things were tough there with John, of course, the way things happen. Right now, if you start thinking about a GM there, you bring in a guy like Ryan Poles, which I'm a big fan of when you bring in someone from a division opponent. You pair him with a guy like Rich Bisaccia to start with as you start thinking about it. Or someone else, of course. I understand there's all kinds of thoughts about that. Ryan Poles comes in there as a good young GM, pairing with a really, really solid football coach. And I think you can make some major strides in Vegas.
I want to talk about the matchup between the Chiefs and Bills. And I don't think there's pressure on either team. Andy's made back-to-back Super Bowls. Nobody's getting fired if they don't win. If you lose to Mahomes, you're not getting fired. I don't think there's pressure on either side. I just think we're looking at transformational all-time quarterback talents. This could be Brady and Manning 9, 12, 13 years ago. Kind of your takeaway, I do worry that Josh Allen still needs to be sandpapered a bit. He can go up, down. Whereas with Mahomes, I kind of feel like I know what I get on Sundays in big games. I would give the edge to Kansas City because of that, but how do you view this game?
Man, that's your GM prowess, brother. I'm feeling it. I do agree with you on that. I think Mahomes, we know what he is. He moves. He's got an element of versatility, which I think is amazing. I think the Chiefs come back in really, really strong, really, really focused. I think Spagnuolo's got them operating on defense right now, and of course their offense is operating. You contrast that with a team like the Bills, who I love what they've done. I love what Sean McDermott's done. I think he is a hell of a football coach. I think the way that Brandon Bean has built that team, really what you have there is you have two head coaches and two general managers who are top-notch in this league, and that is ultimately why they are doing as well as they are. And, oh, by the way, their owners are giving them the keys to the kingdom. That is a very, very important thing, which would segue into ideal spots in the NFL for GM jobs.
You know, I want to talk about, I said last week, I thought the pressure was a little on Stafford and a little on McCarthy. One answered it, one didn't. This weekend, I don't feel a lot of pressure. I do think Aaron has been noisy. He's taken shots at vaccine people, media people, Packer people. Some of those people are going to want to take some hacks at you if you don't win. But it's interesting. When there was all this noise going on, I thought the Packers front office did a pretty good job to just lay low, let Aaron have his YouTube comments weekly, and just lay low. And there were reports they did talk behind the scenes. Let's say they win. Could you as a GM just go, listen, Aaron, let's just rip the contract up. I'll pay you some guaranteed money. They don't have an owner, which I always think is a little bit of a negative. But can you do a bygones be bygones with Aaron and his personality? Let's say they lose, and that's going to create more drama. How would you handle this dance going forward with Aaron? Let's just say they lose. How do you handle it? Because you know you're going to get an offseason of more drama.
You'll get more drama. Hands down, this guy is one of the very best in the league and in many, many years. We know that. As a general manager, Brian Gutekunst, in my opinion, and I think Brian knows his stuff, Brian needs to sit down along with Mark Murphy, and they need to sit down with Aaron and do the bygones, to your point. There needs to be a discussion about that. This guy needs to go nowhere. He needs to stay in Green Bay and finish his career there for himself, for the community. That team thrives on this guy. We know where LaFleur is as a coach. He's a damn good coach, and he has really reaped the benefits of being around one of the best ever at that position. You got to keep this guy online there, in my mind.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know Belichick well. I talked about this earlier. Is that there's been such a cultural change offensively. Nick Saban admitted this in a New York Times piece about 2 years ago, where he said he had a conversation with Lane Kiffin and he just realized, I can't stop some of these offenses. Like, it's just the game's changed. And I'm watching Josh Allen score 7 touchdowns on Belichick. And I'm like, you know, it is interesting, is it not? Like, do you think we both grew up in a generation of defense wins championships? It's just not true anymore. Saban's acknowledging, I can't stop college offenses. Do you think Belichick deep down is having these discussions internally or questioning, like, does he have to make some pivots as a coach, as a personnel guy going forward?
Oh, yeah. I think we saw it this year, what Bill did and his approach, which I admire beyond, because it's not normally what you would see from Bill Belichick and some of the coaches that are similar to Bill. And believe me, there aren't that many that are. I think Bill, what he is so good about, and I remember back when he used to school myself and Scott Pioli and different people coming through there, John Robinson, who's doing a heck of a job in Tennessee. It was all about, you know your organization better than anyone. Everyone else can have opinions, but in the end, you know what it's about. You know how to build the organization. You know the players you have, and you know the money you have. Make your decisions. Be flexible. Don't get out there and spew it to everyone. That's one of the things we know he doesn't do. He keeps it private, but when he does things, he does it because he knows what's best for his organization.
Yeah. By the way, you're a 2-time NFL Exec of the Year. There's some GM openings. Are you applying for those jobs? Are you on Facebook, LinkedIn?
You know what? I wish I knew how to do the whole Facebook and LinkedIn thing. I'm trying to work on my social and digital. I'm watching closely. It's been really interesting watching it. And there are some good candidates out there for these teams, Colin. The interesting thing is, as you see, and we all know this, a lot of first-time guys. I got my chance when I was 40, and a lot of these guys are getting their chances, so that's good. We'll see if there are going to be any experienced GMs getting a revisit.
Good stuff. Great seeing you again, Thomas.
Thank you. I look forward to it, Colin, to see you out that way one day.